So my name's Brian O'Neill, and I just wanted to be devil's advocate for a moment for grammar schools, because my big concern these days is... I went to primary school in Falls Road, and I was lucky enough to pass it on to us, and they go to grammar schools, and they go to Queen's, and got the gold tickets. But what I'm very concerned with these days is, as I talk to people now, who are friends who've got kids, all the middle class parents are paying for tutors, for their kids, for transfer tests. So, ironically, we've taken away the 11 plus, and we've reduced social mobility. Because if I was in a situation now, my parents wouldn't have had the money to afford the tests and all the rest of it. So, while it looks like we're going to have the grammar schools around for a while, but yet we've made it even more difficult for working class kids to have social mobility. And I don't quite understand what Alan is saying, or there's only a few people, because as far as I can see, the entire Northern Ireland Civil Rights Movement was ex-grammar school kids. And so, in education, there has to be some streaming somewhere, because I can't see where you can have a class of 30 kids who are on one extreme. You've got kids who can barely read and write, and the other extreme, you know, quite right. So there has to be some way of screaming for practical reasons.
Alan, you're the last one we've got to check in this round. There's others to come. I know you're going to have to wait because we need to get the panel back in. Alan.
Okay, Alan Sheeran. I've left all my hats in the house. I think so. We've had a great discussion here tonight. We've been talking about sort of social exclusion. We've been talking about integration. I think those are very important things. I think one area, if we're looking at coherent education, I think to have a coherent education, you have to have a coherent theme or an objective that you're actually heading towards. That's the thing that we are missing, and it's missing because, as Mark was saying, we've got a disjointed political system, and that's at the core of it, so we can't get any kind of agreement. But one area that I think we really need to be thinking about in terms of a coherent education system actually lies beyond integrated education and social inclusion. And we need to look at special educational needs as well. We're looking at a system at the minute that is actually under threat. That Sinn Féin minister has proposals in which will strip 50% of the disabled children and children with SEN in the society of their rights, to services. And that's up for grabs at the minute. The bill should be coming in September, and yet that is moving forward at the minute. We are potentially going to be losing a huge amount of services that goes into the kids who are actually the most vulnerable within the society at the minute. If we are talking about a coherent education system, then we need to be ensuring that those children get exactly the same attention and support as all the other kids. If you go to the grammar school, because of the voluntary contributions and so on, quite often we'll have up to 50% more spent on you in your education than all other kids. And we need to ensure that disabled kids and kids in SEN get exactly the same kind of commitment from ourselves.
Thanks, Simon. Okay. Anybody on the panel want to come back on any of those points? I've got to see Liam's hand and Bronna. I'm going to take Bronna first and then Liam.
Okay, so I might be a bit biased when it comes to grammar education because I did go to grammar school, like yourself, you had said, and I do think, this might be seeming really simplistic, but, I don't mean to offend anyone when I say this, but some kids are smarter than others. And they have it in different skills. Mine's was music, my brother's was science. So I think to put children in a classroom of all abilities, might not work. Majority of the time, it doesn't really work, because if you have someone that's in a maths class, if you have someone that's amazing at maths, but they have to be taught, you know, at a lower scale because there's other people in the class that don't really know how to get to that stage, then that means the person that is that wee bit smarter when it comes to maths isn't being developed and that isn't being nurtured. In terms of integrated education, I'm all for shared education, and I do think it does need to be integrated, but because of the way we live, it's very hard for it to happen. I mean, in my area, if I wanted to go to an integrated school, I would have to take 2 buses. And there is a way, if it's just easier to go to the school that you're going to go to. In terms of what Alan had said over there, in terms of, you know, disabled children, I was one of them because I had lost my hearing when I was still in school, and I had to go through having a senko, and I also wanted to do music, which was great crack. but I did say I'll have it in 1 year, but I had to fight for that. Like, I had to fight to be able to go, well, I want to be in a separate room in my listening test so I can hear. And I did go to a grammar school. Just because you go to a grammar school didn't necessarily mean, you know, that you were going to get handed to on a platter. We had to work for it. It may have been because of where my grammar school is, or the fact that a lot of people go into it. Like, the statistics were showing that most of the kids were on free school dinners. So if your parents were rich, why would you be having free school dinners? That type of thing. But I do think we have to remember that everyone's educational needs have to be met with this new system, and you can't discriminate against someone because they're smart. I don't. That's my opinion, really.
Thanks, Bruno.
I think Kirsty, to maybe pick up on the question that you asked around what should our politicians be asking and what should the executive be doing. I think I go back to a point that was made around good schools. I think they need to look at and ask, what is a good school? Just because the school is grammar doesn't make it good. Just because it's integrated doesn't make it good. I think there's schools out there that I think are grammar that aren't, you know, doing well. They're not good for the young people. There's also, when I have been in integrated schools, that I don't think are working, and they're not, you know, doing what young people need and what education should be about. I think, for me, what makes a school good from sort of going into schools and seeing what they're like, it's the culture. It's the culture that is within the school. I think that is a huge influence and a huge bearing on how the young people, you know, perform academically, the type of young person that they come out, and the values, John, that you were sort of referring to and talking about, and what they see as important. And what, for me, going, you know, further in that, what shapes a culture? I think the young people in the school massively shape it, but I also think teachers shape it, and the principals shape it, and the boards of governors shape it. And I think a big thing, through my work with the Spirit of Enniskillen, I work with brilliant, brilliant teachers, you know, people who are great educationalists, who were extremely passionate about young people. But on the flip side of that, there's people who are teachers, there's people who are headmasters who are inappropriate, and they're not, they shouldn't be in that position. And I think there needs to be a hard look at kind of the selection process for people who are teachers, because they are the people that are leading, they are the people that are influencing this culture. So, you know, that will be some of the kind of questions I think that should be asked.
Okay, Liam, I'm going to bring in Kieran in a sec, but first of all, I know Mary wants to answer the point about special needs that Alan raised.
Yeah, I'm a special needs teacher. I teach in a learning support centre, and don't wait till September. Those changes are already all in. There is a culture now of hurdles and gatekeepers, and the process to try and access any sort of support in schools now in Northern Ireland is absolutely hilariously funny, only it's tragic. And this is where your social division comes in, because unless you're a parent who knows what questions to ask, who knows what systems to check, your child could go the whole way through the system and you could be sidelined by platitudes, by teachers who have no alternative because there was nothing else there. But if you've got a little bit of cash and a little bit of know-how, you can go and get your child a private assessment for, say, dyslexia or whatever it is, and you jump all the way to the top of the queue, and your child gets the interventions it needs. So for SEN, that's a major, major issue. And it is segregating children even further, and it is a social segregation on access. On the issue of 11 plus and grammar schools and all the rest of it. I have two daughters still in education. I have one who's doing unbelievably A-level maths. I don't know how she's doing A-level maths. I struggled at GCSE maths, but she's doing A-level maths. I have another daughter who is struggling, like myself, at essential skills maths. Nobody, I think, would be suggesting that those two children should be in the same maths class. But they certainly could sit in the same canteen.
I did do a level maths, so was really impressed by the fact that someone once put up some graffiti with that old loyalist slogan, 6 into 26 won't go. Of course, the idea of not joining United Ireland, because 6 wouldn't go into 26. And someone wrote about try BS 9. So for those of you who haven't got A-level maths, you won't laugh at that joke. But the rest of you will know if you try BS 9, it was 4 times as bad. Now, I'm going to bring in Kevin first, Alan, and then Tony, briefly, for more comments.
I'll keep it to a minute. Just very, very quickly on the grammar school question. The only one point it would raise is I don't doubt for a second that kids who go to grammar schools perform well. Like, it's self-evident. It's at what expense? We have the top 5% performers in the UK. We also have the bottom 20%. And I think that's the trade-off that we make. And it's not one I think I'm comfortable with or I think we should tolerate for much longer. So that's my point, that I think that the many should benefit, not the and what we should do is, instead of kind of bringing the top down to go up, bring the bottom up to where the top are. On the question of what the executive should do, I think it's a brilliant question, and it's linked to a question the lady asked behind about, it seems like contrived, the 40-50%. It's actually, the reason it's 40-50% is because, on the basis of scientific study and evidence, that's the level at which the minority group does not feel threatened. And it's important for two reasons. One, it's because it's important when we have conversations about background, about faith, about culture, about who you are in your history, that there's a balance. But it's also important because in the playground and in the classroom, that one group of students does not feel overwhelmed. Obviously, the intention would be that would dissipate over time as we become a more relaxed society. But it is needed, and it is the critical mass which allows kids to benefit the most from that shared experience. There are other ways of doing it, I don't deny, but that type of education system has been proven to work over the last 25 years. Is the long-term solution? I think that certainly the integrated sector is well up for that discussion. And the final point I would say is, well, what should the executive do? I think to a lot of people in this room, and certainly to myself, and certainly to people who work in those schools, that the benefits of an integrated system is self-evident. But you see, when you're in that box, and that box is strangled by a political system which, rightly or wrong, I don't think they have any base antipathy towards the system. But whenever your politics is green, you look at the school system which best reflects that, enhances it and supports it. And whenever your politics is orange, you look at the school system which is, you know, the inverse of that. Integrated schools sit in the middle. They don't necessarily support what. So you can see how, from a political point of view, the integrated system represents a threat to both. It represents a threat to a stream of voters, a stream of supporters, a stream of people who are sympathetic to your culture, your history, your values and your politics. An integrated system represents a threat to all of that because it says, I can be Catholic, I can be Protestant, and I can vote for whoever I want based on an entirely different agenda. So the one thing I would say, what can the executive do? Don't even support us. Just stop opposing us. That is the only one thing we would ask. Let the parents who want to do this do it unhindered. And that is I certainly think that would be the most important first step. And then maybe a bit of funding now and again when a brand new school comes up, that would be the next one. But so I'll leave it there. Sorry, that was slightly more than a minute.
Thanks, Alan, you wanted to come in next.
Yes, just to come back on three things. One about the politics, one about choice, and one about what's the way forward, I guess.
30 seconds each, please, Alan.
Okay. Well, first of all, I mean, it's interesting to me that whenever you look at the priorities, particularly of the two parties that are sharing power, really, Sinn Féin is strong on equality and very lukewarm on integration. And you can read into that. You can understand that, I think, if you try and think about what their political project's about. Mm. And I think it's the same whenever you look at the DUP side of the House. Again, there may be calls for desegregation, there may be more motivation, if you like, to tackle that as a priority over, you know, attacking grammar schools, which have been perceived to have been the heart of the unionist establishment, in a sense, that kind of fed the civil service and all the rest of it. So, you know, we can do the political economy analysis, and we know why we're locked into kind of not much movement forward on either of those fronts. So I think if we're thinking about social change, and by that I mean change at political level, at structural level, and at the level of the person, in terms of our own behaviours and change, I think all three of those levels. At the political level, we're not going to see much change until our actual system is changed. We do need some form of voluntary coalition or some way of getting an opposition into our governance arrangements. And that's not about taking sides in this argument along orange and green. It's just about saying we're going to be locked into this horse trading forever and a day until either parties have to make voluntary coalition with minority parties who might moderate their views, or we find some other way of getting good political opposition. That's what I would say at the political level. At the structural level, this issue of choice, I agree, is a bit of a fig leaf. Because in a sense, in many societies where there's a diversity of schools, faith-based schools of different types, etc., all our schools are funded by the state. They're all funded by the taxpayer. You know, the choice is an illusion. We all put our money in the pot. It comes out into a system that has been historically shaped. It's unfortunate for me, I think, that integrated schools have ended up being portrayed as a sector, because that's not what the fundamental challenge was by all children together, by all the other parent groups that have emerged since. The fundamental challenge was we need to change the system. We don't need a third sector. I would disband integrated schools in a moment if we could come to some agreement of a state-funded system of common schools, and albeit one, although I would be sympathetic to the humanist and secular position, all the faith-based commitments, I think, can be accommodated within common pluralist approaches to schooling, as can actually ability and all that kind of thing. So the argument we should not be making is about integrated schools, and this is what makes it so very difficult, I think, for those involved in integrated education, because they're continually perceived as taking the high moral ground, you know, we have it all sussed, why don't you all join us kind of thing. That isn't what the argument's about. The argument is about, we have a system here of 330,000 kids in an education system that is dysfunctionally structured. And until we can move to a system of common schools, the ways forward, I could say more about you know, one way forward is to look for the incremental, you know, let it happen naturally, schools mixing naturally. I think Paul Nolan's report kind of nailed that one in saying that, you know, with only 50 schools with 10% of children of a different background enrolled, it's going to take 499 years, you know. That's the other one is about shared education. And my issue with shared education is not that, and I hear all the voices of all, and I was involved, I started my career out in trying to help facilitate schools in Strabane and Derry and places like that to organise very systematic and structured links and contacts between people. But that is about interpersonal change. Yeah, yeah. That is not about fundamental structural change of our institutions. And it's a very worthwhile thing, and we all go on our personal journeys, and we all learn how to be more tolerant and inclusive, etc., of each other. But if that is our only option, we're going to be stymied at the political level, we're going to have no movement at the institutional structural level, and we're pinning the whole of our future generations on the idea that if we continue investing additional money into a system which is already costing us money because it's segregated and duplicating, then we're going to end up with a number of personal stories and people have changed, but fundamentally an inconsistency, an incompatibility, and a contradiction. You know, everyone at personal level is saying we want 79% of people in polls are saying we want, you know, we want to go to school together. And it is the structures and the politicians who are the blockages. And we've got to find ways to work around them.
Thanks. It's worth saying, of course, that 499 years in the period since the Big Bang is just a blink of a 13.8 billion year eye. Tony, you wanted to come in.
I just want to address a couple of points. One of them is about the good school that people are sort of talking about at the minute. And I sort of went to a secondary school, as it was called, and everyone knows it as. But on the same sort of road of the school that I was involved in, there was two grammar schools and two other secondary schools. And on that school, statistically, we were always told that our school was was competing on a par with the grammar schools. Our results were not the same, but if better. And really, I think that comes down and boils down to the drive that the principal had and the enthusiasm and drive that the teachers had, that they thought that these kids are the same and deserve the same level of higher education that everyone else is getting. So I really do think that it is the good schools that, you know, it should be. My mother sent me to that school because, you know, of the principal. The principal was, he changed the school around dramatically. You wouldn't. My granddad went to the same school as me, and you wouldn't send any kids to it. Like it was on the verge of closing down, and it changed dramatically. But as well, in the secondary schools, kids are segregated as well. There was a class of which, you know, it was St Patrick's, and if you were in K, you were seen as if, you know, you didn't really know anything. But if you were in P, you were the smartest, sort of, in the same sort of school. So that was sort of, you know, where I'm coming from. So even if it is, you know, integration, there is going to be the level where people are split up on their abilities, which is always going to happen. But again, they do share the same. They do share the same canteen. They do play at the same team, so they are being together. Just on the fact that another sort of form of education coming from the youth sector side, we do offer an informal education. We do give young people the skills and training that sort of give them that USP. To go on their CV for maybe a job or a future further education. It's not done in a classroom type form. It's done through peer education, where they educate themselves on a peer and discuss about issues and skills and training that they, you know, that they might want. It's not English and maths. Yes, they are essential. I'm not saying that don't come out of school altogether, but what I'm saying is it could be a way of looking at maybe things could be done differently, and they do work. And just on that peer education and being involved in WIMPs, one of our young people applied to a university, and the university actually wrote to Paul, our CEO, and said that one of the major reasons that he got onto his degree was because he was involved in WIMPs and involved in, you know, engaging with politicians, engaging with the civic youth model that we have, and that sort of was one of the USPs, again, as I say, that got him on to the further education that he really wanted to do. So just on those points, I think that, you know, the good school is important. But what I would also say as well is, why not give the young person the choice, as well as the parents, yes, but, you know, give the young person the choice of, well, do we want to do the transfer test? Obviously they have to, but what school do we want to go to? Do we want to go to the one that's closer, or do we want to commute to an integrated school where we get, you know, the best of both?
Thanks, Tony. Now,